Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and this week's online video picks are up on our website. Each week we select five web videos, and I anchor them on our site. One video this week is an iPhone, about an iPhone app, in which the phone drives the car. Take that, Droid. See all five of our weekly video picks at wnyc.org/video. Coming up in about 10 minutes, David Isay with the best question to start a great family conversation over the holidays. But first, whenever the FBI gets a tip about terrorism, it follows all leads, we hope, and descends on the neighborhood and workplace of suspected terrorists. But in those communities, often South Asian and Muslim ones, people are frustrated with law enforcement. They say they're tired of what they consider racial and ethnic profiling, and they want a different approach. And with us to discuss this issue are Manami Malik, Executive Director of DRUM, Daisy's Rising Up and Moving, a South Asian New York community organization in Jackson Heights, and Ramzi Qasem, Director of the Immigrant and Refugee Rights Clinic at the CUNY Law School. Manami and Ramzi, welcome to WNYC, and happy Thanksgiving. Hello.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, same to you.
Manami, can you remind our listeners first of the term DACI? I'm not sure everybody knows what it means.
Sure. DACI is a word in a lot of different South Asian languages that means of our homeland. It could refer to a country, a town, a city, but it refers to people from Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Trinidad, also in Guyana, Nepal, Afghanistan, basically the whole South Asian subcontinent.
And the diaspora.
Exactly.
And so how are the Daisies, you know, and I realize that's a large and diverse group, watching the state dinner last night with the Indian Prime Minister at the White House and the rest of his visit and the issues that were discussed, are people into it, or is it seen as irrelevant to local Daisies' lives?
Mm-hmm. Well, like you said, it's a diverse community. So the Indian Prime Minister is here, but within the subcontinent, there's a lot of tensions between India and Pakistan. A lot of the similar issues around the war on terror is happening in India. India actually has its own version of the Patriot Act, which is very controversial there. So I think the issues here are largely with the Muslim community and in New York that we're mainly talking about Pakistani and Bangladeshi Muslims who are here, who number almost 1 million in New York City, who are dealing with the racial profiling issues.
And we'll get to that in a second. But Daisies means all South Asians and
exactly.
People from there, as you've said, including Indians and Pakistanis who are traditionally enemies. Does that fall away in the community after immigration, in your experience?
To some extent, it does. I think with the younger generations, it does. With the older generations, they still carry some of the historical baggage within our countries. That has to do with colonialism. But I think with younger people, it does. And in this country, I think, especially now, most of us see ourselves as immigrants and understand that, you know, the average American here doesn't necessarily distinguish between an Indian and a Pakistani.
So, Ramzi, on the profiling and the infiltration of mosques, when DRUM and your group, the Immigrant and Refugee Rights Clinic at CUNY Law School, spoke out recently, it was really after the Najibullah Zazi investigation in September, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for DRUM, but, you know, that entire effort came in the wake of the FBI raids that accompanied the Zazi investigation. And it was really about more than just Mr. Zazi. The entire community was affected with, you know, entire apartment buildings being searched, mosques being surveilled, and, you know, people's lives being made next to impossible in many cases. And so that was really our primary concern, was how the entire community was being targeted rather than just having the focus being placed on an individual.
And what does that mean in practical terms, the entire community being targeted?
Well, you know, what that's meant is that, you know, people have felt less comfortable going to their mosques, for example, and practicing practicing their religion freely. And then there is a very large number of individuals who have paid even steeper costs in that they've been approached by the FBI in very public ways, which has in turn made employers reluctant about hiring them or continuing their employment, and has also, you know, made, for example, you know, their mosques, you know, asking them no longer to show up for prayer because the mosques themselves don't want to attract unwanted FBI influence. And so I think the way that the authorities and the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New York went about its investigation in a very public and disruptive way was, you know, unfair to the individuals, but also counterproductive in that it discouraged cooperation from within the community.
And, Manami, I understand one of the things that Drum is asking for from the FBI is to stop using undercover agents at mosques. Do you mean altogether?
I think, you know, our message has been that the FBI needs to do its job. It needs to conduct investigations, but it needs to do it with the, you know, according to the letter of the law and according to some restrictions around, you know, blanket profiling or sending mosques into agents into every mosque. I think what's happening now is that, you know, we have a membership of over 600 South Asians, mostly Muslims, and almost all of them will tell you that they believe that they've come across an informant in their mosque. It's to that extent pervasive that it seems that without even cause in any particular mosque or any, you know, where there's an investigation happening or a possible investigation, it seems like it's a blanket sort of informants are everywhere right now in our community. And what we're saying is that the assessment stage where agents figure out where they need to do their investigations needs to be clearer. What are the criteria for surveilling a mosque, for surveilling individual people? Right now, it just seems to be that there's sort of no bar, no initial threshold on which basis they can send in informants. And the other big issue is the practice of coercive recruiting of informants. We know so many people who've been sort of coerced into being an informant when they say no, that's, you know, they're willing to cooperate, but they don't want to be an informant. They're being harassed. They've been visited by the FBI repeatedly. Some people have even been threatened around their immigration status.
So I want to take a phone call for you from Anna in the East Village, who I think represents what certainly what a number of people are calling to say and what probably a lot of other people are thinking. Anna, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I just have the question, which is how are the FBI and the police supposed to investigate into mosques when there are imams who are conducting, I guess, what is it called, taqiyya, where there's this it's supposed to be seeming like you're part of society, but actually you're part of radical Islam. So if we, and given that we've had these major attacks and then this bust, I think it's a very difficult thing to do. It's a moving target, and it's hard to see. What's your suggestion? I mean, to me, it seems like, I'm sorry, but Muslims are going to be uncomfortable, and that's part of the deal.
Manami?
You know, again, I think that what you're saying is that an entire, we're talking about millions of people in this country are then going to be uncomfortable. And I think, you know, when the Oklahoma City bombing happened, we didn't create a condition where we said every single white, you know, American male citizen needs to be uncomfortable now, and we're going to blanket profile all of them. There are very particular sort of, an investigation involves particular sort of, you know, pieces of information that are pointing in a certain direction. It doesn't mean you just randomly look at somebody because they're Muslim or they go to a certain mosque. I mean, some mosques have, you know, hundreds or thousands of worshipers there, including kids. Are you going to start looking at the kids, too, because their parent listens to a certain imam? I think that the knowledge of Islam is also and the knowledge of the community is also being extremely wrongly purveyed in the mainstream media here.
Knowledge of the community?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning?
I think a lot of, like, assumptions are made. I mean, right now it's like Islam equals radical, equals terrorist, equals violence. It's something that the media sort of perpetrated over a period of time
over
the last 9 years.
Yes, Anna, go ahead.
My comment, though, though is then, if that's the case, if the mosques are so peaceful and so against what's going on, then I think they should put up signs, they should put up posters. We are against Islamic terrorism. We are against fundamentalism in front of their mosque, because, you know, right now there's not really an outward thing that the mosques are doing that's showing that they're really against these negative portrayals.
Mm-hmm. Anna, thank you for your call. Ramsey, go ahead.
Well, you know, I just wanted to respond to Anna's comment because I think it raises a lot of interesting points. You know, one thing that's interesting to note is that not even the law enforcement authorities in this country, locally or federally, have ever contended publicly that, you know, Muslims as a whole, you know, as a population, are suspect, and that you know, they're presumed guilty until they demonstrate in some way their loyalty to this country. Not even the FBI has said that. And in fact, you know, when you look at the various reports that have been issued by the FBI and the NYPD and the Joint Terrorism Task Force, they all acknowledge the fact that, you know, most Muslims have been, you know, law-abiding citizens in this country for generations. And they also acknowledge the need for law enforcement authorities to enlist the cooperation of the community and to take steps to remedy the distrust that some law enforcement methods have created, because, you know, there's a common interest here, which is both the community and law enforcement have a common interest in safety. And law enforcement has recognized on the whole that they haven't been very good at, you know, encouraging cooperation because of these disruptive tactics. So you know, Anna's point is really at odds with what even the professionals in counterterrorism are saying. No one is saying that the Muslim community is a suspect as a whole. So I thought that was interesting.
So Anna is saying, you know, if you're going to look for those few people who are committing the crimes that have a lot of society terrorized right now, and they happen to be coming from a radical, though very small, fringe of a particular community, then you kind of fish where the fish are if you're law enforcement.
Well, I think she was going a bit beyond that, you know, in alluding to sort of the myth of Taqiyya, for example, that Muslims are counseled about lying and that it's a religious duty to lie. I mean, that's all false, and everybody who's done even a bit of research about the history of Islam knows that. So I think, you know, the comment went to casting doubt on the entire community. But I agree with you, Brian, as to the fact that it's a minority, you know, it's individuals within a community who are acting in ways that are dangerous, and the way you go after those individuals is in a very targeted manner and in a way that is calculated to enlist the support of the law-abiding majority within that community. If you want to alienate that community, then what you do is you target the entire community, and that defeats the ultimate objective, which is getting to the actual malfeasor.
We have just a minute left for two things. Priya in Brooklyn writes on our webpage, Desis, the differences between North Indians and Pakistanis are minimal, at least culturally and linguistically. There are more differences between South Indians and North Indians. So that's a whole conversation. But what impact do you think the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed trial, assuming it actually takes place in New York, will have on Desis and Muslims in the city? Manami, like 30 seconds.
I think a lot of heat is being brought into New York right now. It feels like the climate after 9/11 again. I think we'll have to be very careful as a city to remember our diversity, to remember respect and dignity for all communities, and to not sort of get into this moment of, you know, sort of heated backlash again.
Manami Malik, Executive Director of DRUM, Desis Rising Up and Moving, a South Asian New York community organization based in Jackson Heights, and Ramsey Kassam, director of the Immigrant and Refugee Rights Clinic at the CUNY Law School. Thank you both for coming on with us. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and David Isay from StoryCorps next to wrap up our pre-Thanksgiving show on the best question to start a great family conversation. He's got a lot of them, and we're collecting yours. At WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll take your phone calls. StoryCorps sponsoring a National Day of Listening this holiday weekend. Stay with us.